For the last 6 summers, a community garden on Milwaukee's north side has been giving boys and young men a chance to earn money, learn some life skills, and make their neighborhood a better place. It's part of the volunteer-run program, We Got This. Every Saturday for 10 weeks, boys can show up to work in the garden from 8 a.m. to noon, connecting with adult mentors while they do. Andre Lee Ellis is an actor, community organizer, and the founder of We Got This. He joins us from our studio in Milwaukee. Andre, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. How you doing?
Well, good. How are you doing today?
Hey, growing and developing.
Well, now you're growing a lot more than vegetables here. But tell us, how did the harvest go this year?
Oh, the harvest was tremendous, and it's still happening. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few.
Now, walk us through a Saturday in the garden, a Saturday morning. What happens each week while you're doing this program in the summer?
First thing that happens is that the young men are ages 12 to 16 years old. They have to be there by 8 o'clock. 8 a.m., I shut the gate at 8:00.1 is late, not 8:01. They don't have a minute to be late, but they have all the time before that to be on time. They work for 4 hours. They clean the streets. They walk with mentors that do. We have a topic or a word of the day, and that's what they talk about as they're walking through the neighborhood where they live, and they clean up. They come back, and they have discussions on the microphone about what they saw in their neighborhood, what they cleaned up along the way. Then they have discussions where they go off into groups and they have discussions with the mentors about the word of the day and how they can become more productive right on the block where they live. We feed them really, really good. They do the gardening. They weed in the garden. They learn how to grow food. It's just a tremendous opportunity for them to spend some time with men that is lacking, more than likely lacking in the household.
Now, this is in the 53206 zip code. It's in the news sometimes for not great reasons, crime and poverty, incarceration numbers. You see something, though, behind that, something, a lot of potential and positive things. What do you see?
Well, I recently saw an article that talked about that statistic. That happened in like April, May or something of 2014. We started our program in June 2014. And what happened was, but they did a survey, and some people started saying, based on where 53206 ended up in the survey, that it was the worst place to raise a black child in America. And that is not what the survey or the statistics said. It just clearly talked about incarceration in Wisconsin and what cities were the largest. And because we were number one, because we have a larger population than most other cities or counties, and they labeled it that. But I see something way better, and it's being productive. We went from being the number three highest crime block in the city to not even being on the list. I see love blossoming and growing over there, and you know, and that covers poverty.
What, Andre, got you started doing We Got This?
A mother's cry for help for an 11-year-old boy who was going to be arrested for breaking in cars and things like that. They knocked on my door. I was living on the block where I work at that time. And with that, I asked her, where was the young man's father? And she said, I didn't know. And I said, okay, well, we got this then. We got this. And we went down to the 5th District, and we talked with the liaison officer there at that time, and out of the clear blue, I just said, well, you can't arrest him because I got a new program that I'm starting this Saturday at 8 o'clock, and Jermaine's gonna be the first one to start. I'm gonna pay him $5 an hour. I'm gonna give him $20. He's gonna clean up the neighborhood. I described it all, and then when the officer got excited, I love that idea. I need to talk to the captain, see what we could do. What's the name of your program? And out of my mouth came, We Got This.
You have a background as an actor, and it sounds like you must be good at improvising, Andre.
Well, I'm good at being for real, and acting is reacting, and that's what I'm good at. I'm good at reacting, and when it's negative on stage, sometimes you have to turn it around with a positive, or you have to be a quick thinker. And so the acting that I did got me prepared for who I am today, because not only do we grow food and that, but we incorporate entertainment and things like that. We have an event that we do called the 500 Black Tuxedos, and that's where the young men get to dress up and go to dinner in a fine establishment. Thank God for our county executive, Chris Abley, who made it possible, or two of the good years, that we could go to the Crystal Ballroom in the Hilton. And there I want to be able to incorporate the entertainment and teach the young people in the neighborhood to entertain, dress up, and have fun peacefully.
I read in a piece by James Causey at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I think it was at one of those tuxedo events, you tapped one of the kids who was working your program as a speaker, and he'd never spoken in front of people before. Can you share that story?
Well, Jalen Green is a young man whose mom, his mom brought him to me, came to the garden. While I was standing there, I looked at him and I said, I see a microphone in your face. You're going to do public speaking and you're going to speak. And then his mother said, no, he's always had a speaking problem and he's very shy because of it. So I said, well, you'll do the opening speech at the tuxedo event. And at the end of his speech, he said, I'm Jalen Green and I approve this message. He was great.
What is it like to see a kid in that case or some of the other stories you've seen step outside their comfort zone and do something that nobody thought they were going to do that they didn't think they were going to do?
Well, once I asked, I get as many as 100 young boys on a Saturday, or we get as many as 100
wow.
young boys on a Saturday. And once we had 100, and I asked, how many of you don't know your dad? 90 of them raised their hand. How many of you know your dad but still don't have a relationship? Five more added. Out of 100, only five of them knew their dad and possibly had a relationship if they were telling the truth. That's when I developed the slogan or adopted the slogan, I'm not the birth dad, but I am the earth dad. And so what it feels like is I'm a proud father. I'm a proud godfather. I'm a proud community father. Whenever any of them turn it around, sometimes they don't have to do anything different. They can just stop doing some of the negative that they were doing. And when they get a moment to see themselves become a better self, they usually go and grow to that.
We're talking to Andre Lee Ellis, founder of We Got This, a community garden in Milwaukee, where each Saturday during the summer, boys are able to earn money and spend time with mentors. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Andre Lee Ellis is with us, founder of We Got This, a community garden on Milwaukee's North Side, offering boys and young men a chance to earn money each Saturday during the summer, doing work, cleaning up the community, and getting some mentorship along the way, too. Andre, I wanted to ask about, this isn't just about the kids, this is about the mentors, too. Can you talk about the volunteers who work with you?
You know, if you want to, you know, we spend a lot of time focusing on the negative things about how segregated the city is, the state is, or how much crime and all of that. But here's the positive thing. On a Saturday on that corner, you probably have anywhere from 50 to 200 people within that 4 to 6 hour period that were there that come and share. And they're from all different areas of life. You got families that take vacations that come in there because they've heard about the garden. We've gotten national attention. So the mentors are almost anybody positive. So you know, have a lot of working people, a lot of people that care, that want to give back, that have skills. So gardeners, mentors are gardeners. Mentors are people that do construction work and want to help build the furniture because we build furniture. Now, let me tell you this here, too. We went from just leasing the land that we have from the city. We now own the land and we own the fruit orchard across the street. As I sit here and speak with you today, mentors and others are there building a hoop house so that we can begin to do food all year round. And across the street is a memorial fruit orchard that features 7 fruit trees. 6 of them honor 6 young black boys that are between the ages of 12 and 25 years old that were a part of our program at some point, and they died due to a tragic death. But the 7th tree, the first tree that you see coming in, is committed to 91-year-old Ruth Arjorie Smith, who recently passed away at 91, who had dementia but loved the garden, would come, and my grandson, my 11-year-old grandson, would read to her and play video games with her. So the mentors are important because a lot of the young people have no positive adults around them continuously. So when they come and find that pilots, bus drivers, garbage men, people of good careers and unusual occupations, give them a chance to dream again.
Talk about what it's like for the kids. Maybe they're 12, 13 when they start. They do this work. They come out with $20 in their hands. I got to imagine, a sense of pride in them as they walk away.
The best example I could give you is the very first kid who I rescued. That very first Saturday that he worked, he was the first kid he worked. And that Saturday after he worked, I saw him walking down the street and he was dressed up and he had on all white jeans and a T-shirt. And I could tell he got a fresh haircut. And I rolled up on him and I said, Jermaine, you look sharp. Where you going? He said, Mr. Andre, I got $20. I finally get to go skating. I said, really, Jermaine? He said, well, I'll take $5 and I got a haircut. He said, the other $5, I'm going to take the bus bus out there and back. He said, with the other five, I'll pay my way in and rent my skates. And said, with the other five, I can get a hot dog and a soda. I get to go skating. Well, he was financial literacy, said to me. I said, well, he knows how to count and he knows how to do business. Well, the next Saturday, he bought five more boys, talking about he knew where they could work and get $20 to go skating. Therefore came the program. The pride is big. At the end of every session, I shake every single boy's hand before they are given their $20. The other mentors that are there have to stand in the line. The men, the young men, have to shake their hands, look them in the eyes, and answer whatever question or questions they may have. By the time they get to me, they are prepared to go and do the job interview. And so we pay them. We send them on their way. They feel like they did something. Some of them save their money. Some of them go on to do something else with their money. Some of them come back the next week, and when I give them the 20, they say, I saved my 10 from last week. I have 30. And I say, go get you a bank account.
Andre,
that's the pride increase.
Yeah, Andre, a lot of people will see a problem in their neighborhood, their community, maybe feel bad about it, I don't know. But most people don't take the step you did and take it upon themselves to try to come up with solutions. What is it? What is it that led you to take this on yourself?
Well, I care. I love, and everybody deserves to have a dad. Now, my father died when my mom was 3 months pregnant with me, so I never had the pleasure of knowing my dad or what it was like to really have a dad. I had a stepdad and lots of men in the community, but I always longed to know my real dad. So pretty much, I'm like the young boys in the garden. And when I was younger in school, I wasn't the best student. I was not. Teachers were really upset sometimes when I came to school. They were like, oh, no, you didn't get sick today or something. But I want to tell you, nothing feels better than a young man that was in trouble, getting out of trouble. Just today, if I can, real quick.
Yeah.
Just today, a young man named Ramon who walked past the garden every day, didn't have a book bag going to school, and I knew that he was struggling. His mother came and said, he's having so much trouble in school and things like that. So I went and got a book bag. We did book bags this summer, so we made sure that any and everything he needed and then some was in that book bag. I gave him the book bag today, and he said this to me. He said, well, they told me that I have ADHD. And I said, that's why you act like that, because they told you. I said, well, I'm going to tell you what you have. You have stop, S-T-O-P. And I want you to stop believing that, and I want you to do better. So we gave him the book back, sent him on. Before I came here, I went over to the school. I said, how's Ramon doing today in school? And they said, you know what? We haven't heard a peep out of him.
Andre, as we wrap up, it's easy to look at a kid in trouble or a community in trouble from the outside and write it off. Say, well, that's a loss, too bad. What would you say to people to say, no, give a second chance there?
If you're not going to pray, then don't have anything to say. If you're not going to help, definitely don't hurt. But children have to be led. And if they're going astray, then somebody's not teaching them or they're not listening. What you don't say and what you don't do may be what they need. Start sweeping the street and then ask them, young man, come hold this dustpan while I sweep up the dirt. Ask them their name and get them involved. Sometimes some people are crying out because they need somebody just to be nice. Don't judge, nudge, and push them forward.
Andre, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, got to get that website out, can I?
Go for it.
www.wegotthismke.com. www.wegotthismke.com. Go there. Learn about us. Give as you wish. We love you.
That's Andre Lee Ellis, founder of We Got This, a program in Milwaukee that includes a community garden tended by boys and young men in his neighborhood. To find out more, you can check out a series of articles in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel written last year by reporter James Causey. And the website, again, is WeGotThisMKE.com. Acting National Intelligence Director Joseph McGuire faced 3 hours of questions this morning from the House Intelligence Committee. McGuire spoke on Capitol Hill about whistleblower allegations stemming in part from a July phone call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. A rough transcript of that call shows President Trump asking Zelensky to find potentially damaging political information about former Vice President, current presidential hopeful Joe Biden, and his son. Also today, a redacted text of the whistleblower complaint was released, which in some ways may have overshadowed that testimony. Paul Nolet is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Hi, great to be here.
Well, so much going on in the last 24 hours or so, Paul. What is, I'll throw an open question to you. What do you have your eye on? What has stood out to you the most?
Well, there's so much stuff going on. It's kind of hard to focus on one particular thing. But I think really the biggest thing today was that the public does now have most of this whistleblower complaint out in the open. And I think there's a few interesting things in there that give the House of Representatives more avenues to go down as part of their impeachment inquiry. So I think that was probably the biggest thing today, and certainly the testimony by the Director of Intelligence as well as Michael Atkinson behind closed doors in the Senate were both very important stories as well today. So a lot going on for sure.
In his testimony, Joseph McGuire said that the whistleblower, in effect, was credible. We have the whistleblower redacted version of the whistleblower report. It seems to match up well with the transcript of this call between President Trump and the president of Ukraine. So does that lend credibility to the other parts of the whistleblower report, the ones that weren't directly in that transcript?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things with credibility. One, as you just mentioned, the whistleblower complaint really detailed that call quite well, now that we have not a transcript but a memorandum of the call itself. It tracks that quite well. But also in McGuire's testimony today, he did not say anything that indicated that he had, you know, real questions about the whistleblower or thought that he was a political hack or anything like that. There were some questions to that degree. And instead, he backed up the whistleblower and said, it's really important to protect this person, and I'm proud of that person for coming forward. So that adds some additional credibility to the whistleblower complaint.
Well, I want to get a taste of the hearing. Here's House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff from California, a Democrat, talking to McGuire about the urgency of the whistleblower complaint.
Can we also agree that it was urgent that if the President of the United States was withholding military aid to an ally, even as you received the complaint, and was doing so for a nefarious reason, that is to exercise leverage over the President of Ukraine to dig up manufactured dirt on his opponent, can we agree that it was urgent while that aid was being withheld?
There are two things.
I'm talking about the common understanding of what urgent means, because Inspector General said this was urgent, not only in the statutory meaning, this was urgent as everyone understands that term. Can we agree that it was urgent?
It was urgent and important, but my job as the Director of National Intelligence was to comply with the Whistleblower Protection Act and adhere to the definition of urgent concern, which is a legal term.
And that points to some of the concern over why the whistleblower complaint wasn't brought to Congress sooner, until well after they had requested it and complained about it not being provided. Questions also raised about why the people being complained about, in effect, in the whistleblower report, which included the president and in part elements of the Justice Department, got a look at the whistleblower complaint to decide what to do with it, Paul.
Yeah, and so on that second point, there was a direct question to McGuire saying, did you talk to the president about this before it was released to Congress and the public? And he didn't answer the question, or he refused to answer the question, which was an interesting response and I think one of the more important things to come out of this. He kind of said, well, I talk with the president all of the time, given my position, but refused to answer that specific question. I think on the other point, too, in terms of why wasn't this whistleblower report given to Congress earlier, there was some real questions about whether executive privilege had actually been invoked at any point, which McGuire didn't quite answer that question, but doesn't seem like that was the case. But I think from his perspective, the concern was, well, this involved a conversation between the President of the United States and the president of a foreign country, and so I'm very hesitant to release materials that touch upon that, given the confidentiality of those sorts of conversations that need to happen in the executive branch. So I think it was a lot about hesitance to go forward with that, at least until the president voluntarily turned over the memorandum of the call itself.
In that redacted whistleblower complaint that's public now, 2 points that went beyond that phone call. One was the idea that the whistleblower said they understood that senior administration officials recognized that this call would not reflect well on the president and wanted to keep it under wraps. And the whistleblower claims they transferred storage of records of this call and apparently others, again, according to the whistleblower, not where they usually would, but in a classified, a more classified, more secure system that's usually for national security information, not for politically sensitive information. I'm guessing House Democrats really interested in that part of the complaint.
Yeah, and that invokes a number of things. I think, number one, it invokes the Nixon investigation over Watergate and potential claims of obstruction of justice. And so I think that brings to mind that, number one. And also, number two, it brings to mind the Hillary Clinton email scandal and how a lot of Republicans had, of course, criticized her for her email practices. And this ties into that, or at least it seems like the shoe's on the other foot now. So Democrats will certainly be interested in that. In addition, the complaint also has identifies a number of additional people who may have been involved in that phone call with the Ukrainian president, who I think Democrats are going to be very interested in following up with these people as well and potentially having them testify.
Talking to Paul Nolet, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, with the latest in the fire hose of news related to President Trump, the Ukraine scandal, people are using the word now, and testimony before Congress today. Oh, and the impeachment inquiry. So we got a caller. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, one of the frustrating things that I find is really the selective outrage that's out there. You know, it's kind of testifying that he talked with the president, but found it interesting that he wouldn't answer the question. While newsful, they never answer the question. Every single one of Obama's people that testimony has cited the same thing. So the selective outrage is just so telling.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. The line broke up there a couple times, Paul, but Steve, I think saying, okay, President Obama's cabinet members and other officials refused to answer particular questions before Congress. Why should we be upset now when this acting director of national intelligence does the same?
Yeah, and I think one of the important points here is to realize that the impeachment inquiry and the impeachment process itself is inherently political. So it's not a legal process. It's a political process. And because of that, especially in our highly polarized times, it's to be expected, I think, that you're going to have Republicans, in this case, rallying with the president, Democrats with Obama, and then have the situation be reversed when the parties change. And so it wasn't particularly surprising, I think, today to see a certain selective outrage coming from Democrats versus Republicans when we've seen, the opposite occur during the Clinton years, during the Obama years, and on and on. And it really gets down to the point that at the end of the day, this is inevitably a highly political process.
Thanks for that call, Steve. President Trump has been reacting to the whistleblower allegations. The LA Times released audio of President Trump talking here to the U.S. delegation to the U.N. about what should be done about the person who passed along the information. Here's a listen. Apparently somebody recorded this at that event.
I want to know who's the person that gave the whistleblower. Who's the person that gave the whistleblower the information? Because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days where we were smart, right? With spies and treason. We used to handle it a little differently than we do now.
Now, some people have read that as trying to send a message to people in the diplomatic corps and elsewhere in government to not reveal information, to not share this kind of information with Congress or others.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of Democrats in particular have said, well, you know, those sorts of comments just make it more likely that whistleblowers won't come forward with this sort of information in the future. I think from Trump's perspective and from many Republicans' perspective, they're trying to get a handle on this narrative and say, you know, well, there were a number of people within the intelligence community, you know, what they call the deep state or the Washington swamp, who were against them. And so they're trying to push back against that. But I mean, those sorts of comments from the president certainly aren't going to tamp down the drive among many Democrats to look further into this.
And the president and supporters saying, hold on, this is a story about Joe Biden and his son. We're just trying to get legitimate information about them. What do you make of that side of the story?
Yeah, and again, it's trying to turn around the where the focus is currently, which is on the president, to who Republicans see as a political opponent. So again, it's especially at this relatively early stage when news is flying around everywhere, the narrative is a big part of how this is going to go. And so Republicans, and you saw this a bit during the McGuire hearings as well, they're trying to create this counter narrative that to focus on Biden because, so far, and we don't know exactly where this is going to go, but with these various stories coming out, it's not exactly great for the president.
In our last few moments, Paul, what are you watching for next?
Yeah, I think it's going to be there's going to be a number of hearings and a number of actions taken by the House of Representatives to move this story forward and get more information. For instance, I think probably the most important piece coming forward is going to be about whether there was any obstruction of justice here, you know, moving emails to a private server, for instance, that I think there's a lot of details to this story that are left to be out. So how the House goes about collecting that data is going to be very important.
Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's Paul Nolet, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, looking at today's testimony from Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire in front of a House committee. And by the way, at 7 tonight, join us for an NPR special with more of the latest on the hearing and the ongoing impeachment inquiry process.